Okay, we're about to begin a new sugya. So the Gemara is continuing along the lines of who is qualified to sit on a Din Torah. But now the Gemara is going to take a little bit of a switch. Namely, not so much who's qualified to sit on a Din Torah, but even if a person is qualified, it doesn't necessarily give him an insurance policy that if he makes a mistake, he's not going to have to pay. So the Gemara now begins the next level of question. Assuming we have a Dayan who's doing what he's supposed to be doing, under what grounds will he be covered for? I guess we would call it the equivalent of malpractice for Dayanus. So that's where the Gemara begins on Daf Hamad Aleph. The Gemara starts about 10 or 12 lines from the top. Amar Rav, beginning of the line. Amar Rav, Haiman Deboy LeMei Dandina. If a person wants to judge a case, the Itom Evoy LeMiftera. And he wants to be certain that if he makes a mistake in judging the case, so he's going to be exempt from having to pay. Lichko reshusa bibeiresh galusa. So he should get permission, he should be authorized, his license, from the resh galusa. Now again, the resh galusa, without going to any long historical tirade about the resh galusas, resh galusa was the position of pretty much political authority for everybody in Golos, i.e. for the Jewish community in Bavel. So the Resh Galusas had a little bit of a colorful personality sometimes. Some of them were very fine, upstanding Tamil Chachamim. Some of them were not as good as others. But the bottom line is, they did have a lot of clout. They had it in with the Persian government, and they had a very, very significant amount of authority in the Jewish community. It's strangely enough, we still have Akar Satov to them 1,500 years later. We still throw them in for the Mishaberas and the Yukum Purkans, even though... Remember, Rav Asher Weiss once commented, he said that if you want to get a sense as to how long it takes things in davening to change over the years, he says, has anybody ever seen a Resh Galusa? They've been in hiding for about 1,200 years or so, and they still get Ikum Prukun for them, so it takes a little bit of time for things to change in the city. Anyway, so the Resh Galusa here would be able to, in a sense, give a license, give an insurance policy, that if a person would make a mistake, then they wouldn't be held responsible. Now the Gemara continues. So now the Gemara goes on to assume that what if you're not in Bavel? What if you're in Eretz Yisrael? It's going to be hard for you to get the authority from the Resh Galusa. So there is a parallel office of authority, and that was the authority of the Nasi. Now, even though we're talking about a period well after the Churban, but the Romans did leave in position to some degree of there was some kind of authority of the Nasi, there was Sanhedrin that was functioning in the many years even after the Churban. So the same way that there was a Resh Galusa position in Bavel, so there was a Nasi position in Eretz Yisrael. It was actually two different governments. It was two different Goyish governments. The Persians were running Bavel, and the Romans were running Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara raises the question now, what if a person has authority in one place, is that going to cover? Is this an international insurance policy, or it only covers you where you are? So, whenever I see this Gemara, I always think of a mushal, Lahav Elf Avdolos. It's like if you try to drive in Mexico, I don't know what the rule is now, but for years, you weren't allowed to drive with American insurance. You had to get a special Mexican insurance. How do I know that? Because we once drove to the border, and they told us we have to stop our car there. We can't drive into Tijuana. I said, why not? They said, because you don't have Mexico, you have to get Mexican car insurance, because the American car insurance isn't going to cover you. So we'll have the awful ball. Let's go around here also. The Gemara wants to know whether the insurance policy of the Resh Galusa will cover you in Eretz Yisrael, or will the insurance policy of the Nasi cover you in Bavel. So the Gemara makes the following distinction. No, I don't mean he's going to cover. I don't mean that. I'm just using it as a derech moshul malitza, correct. Resh Galusa is not paying your bill, that's for sure. So comes in, but it says, pshit, the following is pashut. Mehacha lahacha, mehasam lahasam. So for sure, if you, again, these are the Chachmei Bavel speaking, so mehacha lahacha, if you're in Bavel and you have the permission, you have the license for the Resh Galusa, that's going to work for Bavel. Well, mehasam lahasam, if you have the authority from the Nasi, that's going to work for Eretz Yisrael. Well, mehacha lahasam, mahani. And similarly, if you have the Babylonian authority, you have the Resh Galusa's authority, that's going to be actually more powerful, that will work in Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? How did Chazal know that's such a davar pashut, that the Bavel authority is going to work? The Hacha Shevet V'Hasu B'Chaykek. The Gemara comments on a pasuk in Parshas Vayechi, that there are two different positions of authority that are alluded to in the bracha of Yaakov Avinu. One is a shevet, and one is a mechaykek. What is the difference? Kedesani, we learned in a brisa. Lo yasur shevet b'Yehuda, ein la rashi galia shebavavel shivodes Yisrael b'shevet. So the word shaved literally means a rod, means a stick. That means that gives a little bit more of a force, a little bit more of a, you know, a power in terms of the physical world. Umechaykik bein raglov. Who's the mechaykik? Mechaykik doesn't sound like a guy with a fist. It doesn't sound like a guy with a stick. It sounds like a rabbi saying shir. Mechaykik, like chelkas mechaykik sofa. Moshe Rabbeinu is the mechaykik. Elu bnei banav shel Hillel shemlamdim toibe rabim. The Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu saw Bruch HaKodesh, that there's always going to be a continuation of the line from Shevet Yehuda. They're going to be Mechokim, and they're going to be Shevet Yehuda. So this played out in the days of post-Churban, that in Bavel they had much stronger physical force, physical might, whereas in Eretz Yisrael they were just bigger Tamid Chachamim. So the Gemara says that the more powerful of the two was Bavel. The Rish Galusas had more physical authority, and therefore their policies, their license is going to cover you in Eretz Yisrael, but not vice versa. And that's what the Gemara raised the shalom. What about the other way around? The Gemara finally concludes that in fact it's not going to work. So Ad Kan Divrei Gemara. So this is one of the strangest Gemara. Very, the whole thing is so bizarre. The Gemara, first of all, is assuming that this principle of somebody you got a license, you got a green light from the Nasi, from the Reish Galusa, and some hocus pocus that's going to work in terms of getting you out of having to pay. And the Gemara is making a hierarchy. It depends that the authority from here works for here, it doesn't work from here, for there. What is going on? What in the world is flying? What is really behind these 10, 12 very, very strange lines in the Gemara? So it is clear from the Gemara that the starting point is you should have to pay. You pasuk in the shayla, you made a mistake, you caused somebody to have said mamon, assuming that the din is not going to be able to be overturned. Why won't the din be able to be overturned? So that you have to learn the sugyas of Masech Sanhedrin, either because it's a nasa nasa biyad, or it's a tovim dvar misha, tovim shukul adas, or the other guy simply ran away with the money. Whatever the details are, the lamaisa have said mamon was caused. There's no question. Reuven got up there, he gave a psak din, and he goofed, he made a mistake, make mistakes, and his mistake caused somebody else to have sin mamon. So the ikra din is, of course, he has to pay. What does he have to pay for? Based on what principle? So this seems to be related to sugyas that appear in the end of Maseches Bava Kama. This is not quite a mazik piyadayim. This is not the same as we just read in last week's parasha, maka nefesh b'emi shomena. This is not the taking of a baseball bat and smashing a guy's window. It's not a mazik piyadayim. It's a mazik in a somewhat of an indirect way. Now, normally we have a rule, mazik b'yadayim is chayef, mazik derech groma, in a very, very indirect way, is going to be potter. But there's something right smack in the middle. That's what's called dita degarmi. So the Gemara tells us in the end of Maseches Bava Kama that there is this middle category, very, very unclear, where do you draw the line? It's not quite a mazik b'yadayim, it's not quite a groma b'nezik and potter. It's right smack in the middle. That's a machlekes tanoim between Ramei and Rabbanan. Are you chayav mishum dinin degami or potter mishum dinin degami? And here, even though normally we don't follow Rabbi Meir against the other chacham, here the Gemara says this is an exception to the rule. Kaimel andoin dinin degami. The later Amoraim paskin that we do follow dinin degami. We actually pass like Rabbi Meir. You chayav to pay for dinin degami. So the Gemara says that one of the examples that would fall into the cracks of this dinin degami is this kind of a case. It's causing a person to have said, my psach, because you have sin. Again, it wasn't direct, it wasn't totally, completely indirect, it was somewhere right in the middle, that's Dina Degami. There is a big machlokes that we've shown him, whether Dina Degami is chayev as just a knas b'yam, just a penalty, that Chazal said, but really, min HaTorah, this is not like taking a baseball bat and smashing a window. And other Rishonim say, no, it's really chayev, it's chayev mikra din. This was a machlokes Taisus in the Ramban. Taisus in a few places in Shas, always raises the question, how do you know what's the difference between Grom and Garmi? It looks so similar. So Taisa says, yeah, it's all Midrabbanan. Minat Torah, it's all the same thing. Minat Torah, Garmi is Potter. Grom is everything's Potter. Dinin Garmi was just a nice way of saying that it's a common thing, and Chazal were worried about people doing it, so therefore they slapped you with a kanas. Grom just means that it was so uncommon, so unlikely, therefore they didn't bother to slap you with a kanas. But in terms of any fundamental, you so to stick a difference between the two. So Taisa says, yeah, there's no real difference. Let's go from the Ritzvo, says, yeah, there's no real difference. It's all the same. And the Ramban wrote an entire book to try to disprove Taisus. He's called the Kuntres Dina Degami. So he wrote an entire 30-page Kuntres to try to show, no, it's a real Dina Torah, it's not a Knas, it's a Dina Torah, and therefore there are real differences, and he tries to show you what the differences are, etc. At the end of the day, for our purposes, it doesn't make much of a difference. For our purposes, the starting point is you would be Chayev, because the Dayana makes a mistake, is Dina Degami. So either Chayev, Midrabban, Chayev, Midrabban, whatever it is, Lamaisi Chayev. But that's the background of our Gemara. But now everything changes. Because once you get a green light, once you get a license, you get the authority from some grandiose figure in Jewish history, whether he's the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael or the Reish Galusa, so then everything changes. How does everything change? Especially if you hold like the Ramban, the Yechayim and HaTorah, so how does everything change? So with the Reis Yechayim, I have to pay. What kind of game is this? Because you went and you got a license, therefore you're potter. What's the point there? If you state the Parshas Mishpatim, you have a license to do things. What kind of a p'tur is that? So he's not necessarily a samuchim. We're talking about many of the chachmim above, we're not even samuchim, but he's a yochid mumche, someone who's allowed to do it. We just spoke about last week that he's very, very knowledgeable, and therefore he's allowed, he's a mumche l'rabim, he is allowed to be done afilu yechidim.
Does it change if he's in
samuch? I'm not sure that that's going to help. I'm not sure that's even going to necessarily, because there are people here who also did have samuchim, and also talks about getting rishus from. So where did all this come from? What kind of love is this? What kind of a pointer is this? So Rashi on the spot says, the answer is obvious. Rashi says, the answer is obvious. Rashi, if you take a look in the Divrei Maaseh Shevet, Rashi says, Lashon Sarara, V'yesh Mishul Tahafkid, Efkabez and Efkid, Dechsev, Kotz, Yipsuchim, and Ezra, Gbaz, and Yivam, Skitin, etc. So Rashi says, clearly the name of the game here is Efkabez and Efkid. But now the question is, the Gemara is identifying two different bodies that have the ability to apply the rule of Efkabez and Efkid. The Gemara is talking about the koach of the Reish Galusa to do it, and the koach of the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, the Nasi Eretz Yisrael. Apparently, if this entire halacha, the whole tour, this whole exemption, is clearly part of Hefker Beis and Hefker, because Mikra didn't Yisrael b'chayv al tina degami, so then the Gemara is clearly telling us that either one of those two bodies has that halachic privilege of Hefker Beis and Hefker. That's a great surprise, because the Nasi was a Beis and presumably Reish Galusa also was running some kind of a Beis din.
Based and said that this rule is going to apply when the
rishus
is given by either of those.
Okay. So we're going to see about that exactly. Who's giving the, who exactly is invoking the Efker Beis Efker? We'll see as the sugya develops in a moment. So Tosfos gets into a little bit of a pickle here in terms of hierarchy, a little bit of inner politics between the Bnei Bavel and the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. I always find it fascinating because if you look in the Gemara a few places, you'll find some there was nuances of issues that between the two, which is not a grandiose surprise. I mean, we have plenty of it going on in today's world as well, between the Bnei Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So I guess this is part of Jewish history's reality. So comes Tosfos, and the Divrei Maaseil, the Hocha Shevet Maaseh B'Chokin, it's the third Tosfos from the bottom. So Tosfos writes, Mashma the Shevet Adif. It sounds, it's more the Mashma's Buchach, that Shevet is Adif. That means the Koach of the Bnei Bavel was higher than the koach of the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. That's what says the Gemara. Because the authority given by the Reish Galusa covers you in Eretz Yisrael, vice versa, doesn't cover you. So, if you want to put the words into what Tosfos is basically observing, the koach of Beis Din, of the Bnei Bavel, was actually a higher koach of Beis Din than the koach of the Eretz Yisrael, but they didn't. So Tosfos says that doesn't seem to fit into a general picture of things. In the middle of a complicated sugya, the beginning of the fourth perek of Psachim, basically the first two blot of the fourth perek of Psachim deal with minhagi ha-makom, particularly when you have discrepancies in minhagi ha-makom, and you have a guy going from one place to another. The basic rules of the Mishnah, the Gemara, come out somewhere along the following, that a person is mechuyif to follow minhagim that relate to him. What do you mean relate to him? Let's say if he has a personal minhag, he's supposed to follow that personal minhag. If he has a family minhag, he's supposed to follow the family minhag. If there's a communal minhag, he's supposed to follow the communal minhag. There's a Klal Yisrael minhag, he's supposed to follow the Klal Yisrael minhag. The halacha is, you're supposed to follow minhagim. Now, what exactly is the engine that's forcing me to drive to follow minhagim? So it depends. If it's a minhag of all Yisrael, that may be, according to the Rambam, that's an issue of Lo Sosor, that's part of Lo Sosor. If it's a minhag of a family, perhaps it's Altita Shtar Simecha. If it's a minhag of a community, maybe it's Altif Rashmirat Zibor, Mishra Bachlek, whatever the different reasons are that guide us to the first two, three blot in Masech, in the fourth parak of Psachim. The bottom line is, you're supposed to follow and hug him that speak to you. But what do you mean they speak to me? What if it's a minhag ha-makom if I live in this community, then I'm bound by the minhag yamakom. What if I'm traveling? I'm going from one place to another. So the Mishnah basically tells us, no simulam chumre yamakom shiyotze misham, for chumre yamakom shalach l'sham. That's the basic rule. A little bit of exceptions. The Gemara tries to, you know, tone down the principle a little bit. But that's kind of what ends up happening. That you end up with the chumres of both. That you end up having to follow the minhagim that you, where you came from. And you have to also superimpose the minhagim where you are. So probably the most classic example of this is, in today's world, is the question of Yotav Sheni. Assuming that the status of Yotav Sheni today is governed by the rules of Menhagim, which is also not 100% clear, but assuming that that's true, that the rules of Yotav Sheni pretty much follow the general guidelines of Menhagim, so then you would have the following situation. Let's say you have a person, let's say a marshal, a person lives in America, and he happens to be going to Eretz Yisrael for a Yontif. So we should plug in that rule. No salam chumra makam shiyat misham, the chumra makam shalach l'sham. So the keeping a second day yontif is bigger chumra. That's a chumra. So that chumra should be bound on the person based on the regular sugya in Maseches Pesachim. So the truth is that's what 99% of people said until 50 years ago. That's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes. That was the minhag in Eretz Yisrael. Belishum Sofek, the Beis Yosef lived in Eretz Yisrael. He tells you that this is what the people used to do, and that was the practice. The Chacham Tzvi, who did not live in Eretz Yisrael, Chacham Tzvi lived in Amsterdam. The Chacham Tzvi has a chiddush. He writes that maybe the model of Nozalam Chumre Machab Sheyotze Misham doesn't really apply to Yontav Sheni for the following reason. But Medivar Amur makes sense that you're bound by previous Minhagim, where you came from, because those Minhagim could theoretically be true in this place also. It happens to be that it's not. So let's say, I don't know, you come from a place where everybody keeps Chov Yisrael. Then you go to a place where nobody keeps Chov Yisrael. It's the argument's sake. In theory, that place could all of a sudden decide to adopt the Minhag of Chov Yisrael. It means this Minhag is not foreign to that place. This Minhag is not antithetical to that place. It happens to be that this particular community is lenient about this. So you're still bad. You're still stuck with your Chumash Makom Sheyotze Misham. But says the Chacham Tzvi, what if you have a kind of a Minhag that could not take place in this place? It would be impossible if they would try to institute this Minhag in this place. We say you're in violation of Al Tosef. You're not allowed to start such a Minhag in this place. The Chacham Tzvi says, so you see this place is muf, this minhag is mufka, this minhag doesn't make any sense in this place. So that was the Chacham Tzvi's argument to say that the minhag of whatever, the minhag, whatever you want to call Yontav Sheni, you can, let's see all of the Bnei Eretz Yisrael decide, what a great idea, let's accept the chumrah of keeping Yontav Sheni. Yeah. Yeah. It's never going to happen, trust me. Let's all the Bnei Eretz Yisrael wake up one day, you know, let's start this, it's a great thing, we like this, it was so nice back in Chutzos, we've got 2 days off, let's plug in a second day Yontav for good luck, we'll accept this minhag. So that's an Isidir Aysef. Let's go about Aysef. You're not allowed to get a Yom Tov. We're only allowed to get a Yom Tov because Chazal told us that we have to. It's fake the Yom, and he's not going to go to Seichem. Otherwise, not allowed to stop me at Yom Tov, just like that. So comes the Chacham Tzvi and says that the minig of Yom Tov Sheni, whatever it is, doesn't make any sense in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, even though you're an American and you're quote unquote stuck with Yom and Hagim, it's not Shaykh to be knowing that minig in Eretz Yisrael. That was the famous Pesach of the Chacham Tzvi. So again, from the days of the Beis Yosef till 50 years ago, so everyone knew Chacham Tzvi said it, and that was about it. It wasn't on the radar screen. So in later generations, so some of the poskim began to sigh a little bit. Chaim held that maybe Chacham Tzvi Ikaron is right. He didn't hold that way Lamaisa, but he said maybe Lomdus is really right, and the Rav was a little bit there. So somehow, all of a sudden, the pendulum started to turn a little bit. Now is not the time or the place to discuss some of the other factors that may have contributed to why Chacham Tzvi became very popular. Most of the reasons were not really lumdish reasons why it became more popular. We'll leave it at that. There was certain people had certain incentives why they liked the idea of only having one day of Yom Tov over two, and we'll cut out the rest of it. Another time, another place. Anyway, so back to that story. But Ikaron, that's the basic rule that Nosalam Chumir Machum Shot Shem Chum Machum Shalach Hashem. So in the middle of that whole sugya, the Gemara throws out the following possibility, which again in the end gets rejected. The Gemara says that maybe that idea that you're bound by all the minhagim, no matter where you come and you're going, maybe there are differences between Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael. The minhagim of Eretz Yisrael are a high level. Those are quote unquote the more correct halachic minhagim. And maybe if a person, let's say, comes from Eretz Yisrael and he has certain kulas that they practice in Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to Bavel, maybe he's allowed to just follow whatever he did in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe he's not bound by the Chumrei Makom Shalach L'Sham, because everybody knows that the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael are better. They're strong. They're greater to be the Chachamim. Maybe their Minhagim are on a higher level than the Minhagim of Bavel. And maybe there's an Eretz Yisrael Bavel Chiluv. In the end, the Gemara rejects it. But at one stage of the Gemara definitely felt that the Minhagim Eretz Yisrael are much, much more powerful than the Minhagim Bavel. So comes Tosfos and says, so I don't understand. So Tosfos says, that Havlam, when it comes to our sugya, so when it comes to the power of the Resh Galusa versus the power of the Nasi, which is also a question of which Beis Din is the higher level of Beis Din. So some of the Bnei Bavel are victorious. They win. They have the top level Beis Din. When it comes to Minhagi HaMakom, so some of Eretz Yisrael is more Chomer. So Taisus quotes the following Teretz. So Briske Torah. For Emir Benetam, Benetam says, like Benetam says very often, there are two different sugyas. The Hani Mili B'milsa De'isav Heter. The sugyas of Pesachim are talking about, there was a particular machlekes about whether part of an animal was considered to be chaylev or not, different minhagim. When it comes to shahs of kashrus and Shabbos and tas b'shpacha and yontif and tefillin, it comes to those kinds of things. The b'nei etzoch kime tvei. The b'nei etzoch is all better. Why? The avir the etzoch machkim. The Gemara Bava Basra says that Eretz Yisrael has an added bracha. The air of Eretz Yisrael makes you smart. It means the Tamid Chum in Eretz Yisrael have a hierarchy over the Tamid Chum in Bavel. Kidi Amahacha. So Tosha says that if you look in that Gemara, that's borne out. Because the Gemara quotes the Pasuk Mechaik. Mechaik means Tabachacham, means a Rebbe, someone who's teaching Tabi Rabbim. So the Chachmer Eretz Yisrael will grade it Tabi Chachamim. Aval inin hafkas mamon, we put there, to have gebeiz in hefker, adifi b'nei bovel. So says Tosha, wait a second. Our sugya is not a question who's a greater Tabi Chacham. It's a question of who has more teeth in court. Who has a stronger koch of Beis Din to be mafkia mamon? So says Tosfos, the Chachmei Bavel attack is stronger. Adif ebnei Bavel dik v'shevet shvodas am b'makel. And then Tosfos makes reference to Yerushalmi that explains how did this happen exactly? Why is it that the Bnei Bavel are more koyach in dinim mamonis than the Bnei Yisrael? So the Rishalmi says it has to do with because the Bnei Bavel were the descendants of a Benach Ben from David HaMelech, and the Bnei Yisrael were a Benach Abbas. It was a mother chain rather than a father chain. It gives you a whole historical Ayin Rishalmi Maseches Kilayim. So whatever the rationale, whatever the reason is, doesn't matter for our purposes. Taisa says the bottom line is that there's a big difference. Are we talking about that Orchaim and Yerodeah? That's basically the difference. That Rechaim and Yerodeh, Shailas of Kashrus and Shabbos, etc., B'nai, Eretz Yisrael, they're smarter, they're granted Minhagim, so their Minhagim are in a higher level of Minhagim. Hafki Mamun is a different Mogim. Adkan, Divya Tesis. So basically, this idea that we have two Bati Dim in front of us, one is called the Beis Din of the Resh Galusa, one is called the Beis Din of the Nasi. We know for a fact, as Tesis, that the Nasi were greater to Mincham. Eretz Yisrael were greater to Mincham. And yet, the Hefke Beis Din, Hefke Koyach of the other Beis Din is stronger. How do we make sense of that? Doesn't the words mean Hefke Beis Din, Hefke? Isn't that Beis Din measured by the degree of Tamir Chachamim? Isn't that the criteria that we're using to define Hefke Beis Din, Hefke? So I understand that Resh Galusa is a good Beis Din, and the Nasi is a good Beis Din. Everyone's a good Beis Din. They're all wonderful, but they didn't. But if you have a clash between which is the greater of the two, shouldn't the ones who are greater, Rabban, Mocha, Shemish, were better carry the day? So you see clearly from Tyson. No. You see from the Gemara. It's not true. So what does that tell us? What does that indicate to us about this principle called Hefke Beis Din, Hefke? So there is a Dvar Avram. The Avram, the Kovner Rav, the Avram develops a whole Yisoy, the whole Dazzle Dazzle Lom de Shavarth, as to what is this parish of Hefke Beis Din Hefke all about. I mean, we know the brothers from Psukim, Halach Moshim, Sinai, Psukim, Navi, whatever the Bukharis are. Bottom line is, everybody agrees there's a sugya called Hefke Beis Din Hefke. Yesh Lachlo, Yesh Ladun, says the Avram. What aspect of Beis Din leads us down this road of Hefke Beis Din Hefke? It says that about Avram, if you think about it, there's like a study in jurisprudence, whatever the name is. It says that about Avram, the role of a Beis Din is really twofold. There are really two separate and distinct jobs that a Beis Din has in town. What do you have a Beis Din for? What's the purpose of a Beis Din? So comes the Dvar Avram and says, well, obviously, the Beis Din is supposed to assist us to reach the correct halachic position. It means we have shailas that come up in town. So there are tzorchei atzibur that come up. We want to know, we want to appear to Yerushalayim Rucha. We want to be able to, you know, guide ourselves properly. So we hope and pray that the Dayanim who are sitting on the Beis Din are the greatest of the Chum in town, and they're going to help us. They're going to tell us whether the mikvah is kosher. They're going to tell us whether the zget is kosher. They're going to tell us whether the erev is kosher. That's the job of the Beis Din, to make sure that halacha is observed at the highest possible level. That's what's not a free fall. No pun intended. It's not a hefkevelt. You have to have the great Tamir Chachamim. But in one sense, the role of Beis Din, they're they're wearing the hat. I don't mean literally the hat, but they're wearing the hat of the rabbi's hat. It means they're wearing the Talmid Chacham's hat. But there's a whole other dimension of Beis Din. All the Tzarech Ya'ir are Mutal on Beis Din. Beis Din, like the Moshe, the Mishnah Shkolim says, the Beis has got to make sure that the roads aren't broken. The Beis has got to make sure that the bathhouses are working. The Beis is in charge of making sure that the Tzarech Ya'ir are taken care of. That's have nothing to do with knowledge and halacha. So what is the role of Beis Din in terms of that? So it's understood every society needs some people to take that role of leadership. It's just the way the world is. When there's no leadership, so nothing happens. Ish is rechaim below. So then everyone just total hefkevel. So every society in some shape or form, some went down the route of dictatorship, and some went down the route of democracy, and whatever different shapes or forms there are, everyone has some degree of a government, some degree of leadership. But that leadership is not necessarily Torah leadership. In theory, whoever could do the job, whoever could fix the roads the best, whoever could make sure that people are not cheating each other the best, whoever could make sure that the Tzarech Ya'ir are taken care of. So in theory, you could have a system where these two hats that are being worn are not necessarily worn by the same people. You actually do have such a system, not in halacha. That was the founding fathers. They thought of that system, the separation of church and state. So that's exactly what they did. They set up Lahavlof Havdalos, there was that church, and there was the state, and the two have mamash nothing to do with each other. So that was a tremendous chiddush, because the whole world until then wasn't really doing that. So Lahavlof Havdalos in Torah also, in theory you could have that, but that's not the model that the Torah says. The Torah doesn't say you set up two sets of what they did. You set up one group of rabbis who paskin shalos, and the other set of rabbis who make sure people don't kill each other. No, it's the same Ramadan, it's the same Dayanam, it's the same Beis Din. So Beis Din is really wearing two hats simultaneously. So says the Dvar Avraham, this koyach of hefker Beis Din hefker, which hat does this come from? What is it, which dimension of Beis Din is it that is responsible for this halach of hefker Beis Din hefker? Because the great Talmid Chachamim, because the guy knows how to learn a ketzos and a sivus and to read a Reb Chaim, that gives him koach lahafkir mamon. That's where it comes from. Because he's a big rabbi, because he knows the Chashabas, but it's a big mafkir mamon. L'chor, the koach to be mafkir mamon comes from the second role of Beis Din. Their job is l'sachin tzorche ye'ir. They have to make sure that everything is going smooth in the community. So sometimes, one of the tzorche ye'ir is, sometimes you have to be mafkir mamon. You have a guy who's not acting appropriately. You have sometimes halachs that have to be instituted by Dark Yisholim, by Tikkun Olam, whatever the different Nidim Drabbanan that are instituted. So there are certain things. Yalamashal, we have to institute that Dayanam who sit on Dinei Torah can be potter. Otherwise, who's going to ever sit on Dinei? If no one can get this malpractice insurance, whatever you want to call it, who's going to bother sitting on Dinei Torah? I'm going to sit on Dinei Torah, and next week the guy's going to make me pay for all the mistakes that I made. So it's Laman, not Tzorche Ya'ir. You have to have a certain system in place to potter Dayanam. So who's going to be the ones to supervise this tour system? You need a rabbi with a long white beard who knows how to read Reb Chaim and Mishnah Berurah. What do you need that for? You need a guy who knows how to handle with mamonis and insurance policies and knows how to handle with who what's going to work, what's not going to work, etc. But that it's also Beis Din. It's not just a guy. It's also Beis Din. But says it Vavram, it's that again. I don't mean this in the real sense. It's almost like it's like the secular part of Beis Din rather than the religious part of Beis Din. It's the Sororishim of Beis Din rather than the Talmid Chacham part of Beis Din. So l'chora, what the Dvar Avraham is saying, now puts this entire sugya into its proper light. That's exactly what the Gemara is, exactly what Tosfos is saying. That there were two different sets of what they did that were functioning. One was functioning in Eretz Yisrael, one was functioning in Babel. They were both doing a dual job. The Bnei Eretz Yisrael had to take care of the Tzarech Tzibur, and they had to learn sugyas and paskin shadows. And the Bnei Babel had to do the same thing. But if you want to know who is better, so the answer is, it depends on which part of Beis we're looking at. If you want to know which was the starker Beis in terms of who had greater authority in matters of Issa Heter or Chaim and Yerodea, you better believe it. The Bnei Yisrael were much greater than the Bnei Bavel. But in terms of who had the greater koyach, who had the greater shlita, who had the upper hand in terms of Lahafke Bamon, whether like Rishalmi says, whatever other reason, whatever the reason why that political reality came into being, the Reish Galusas were a lot tougher than the Nesim. The Nesim rabbis, a long white beard, saying shirim, they were great. But Lamai said they didn't have the teeth that the Reish Galusas had. So therefore, what Tosfos says fits in beautifully. The whole picture of the Dvar Avraham fits in beautifully. So this idea of the Dvar Avraham, he was really the first one to express this idea literally, as a whole first piece of the Sefer Dvar Avraham, that the koyach of Beis Din, of Hefker Beis Din Hefker, is not neved, does not emanate from Torah knowledge. It rather emanates from a quote-unquote secular authority, because Beis Din is wearing that hat as well. So the Dvavram, although he was mechadish as al-hadir, he then goes on to show you, you know what, if you look carefully, it's in Rishonim. Not just in the Tosfos here. It actually has a mocha in Rishonim, and he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. So I think I said it on the Ma'amar Kamos. A fascinating, fascinating Rabbeinu Yonah. I'm going to collect this item, Rabbeinu Yonah. So we take a look on page Reishon and Hay. So the first paragraph. Rabbeinu Yonah is discussing the sugyas of Dina Machus Adina. We know the Gemara tells the Baba Kama, there is a halacha that if the Beis Din makes a law in the realm of a monetary law, so pretty much it's binding. So the two contexts that the Gemara speaks about Dina Machus Adina in the end of Baba Kama, one is the Gemara is about paying taxes. The government says you got to pay taxes, you got to pay taxes. And the second rule the Gemara says is, if the government decides that they're going to take somebody's property, so they can do that. Eminent domain, they can take it. In America, they're nice to pay for it, but I'm not sure in Babel they actually paid it for it. They took it, they took it. So the Gemara says that, raises the question, what right do we have to ever go on a bridge? What's the Shaila? Who built the bridge? The bridge was built with wood. Where did they get the wood from? Gemara says the government came one day, they chopped down a guy's tree. The guy's screaming, don't take my tree. And the government's saying, stuff, we need your wood to build a bridge. So Gemara says, what right do we have? We're using stolen property. So Gemara says, Dina Machus Adina, that they have the craft to build an Dina Maminus. So comes Rabbeinu Yonah and puts the brakes on Dina Machus Adina. So he says, it's the in the end of the first paragraph, at 5-6 lines up from the end, but Dina Machus is the first words. Shlohuska Dina Machus El Hafka'a. He said, what Dina Machus Adina means is, Beis Din can declare, the Malchus, or the government, can declare your property mafkiyit, or mafkirit. They declare it's not yours anymore. Shanachasim mufkoin mi baleim b'dini ha-melech. That's what Dina Machus Adina is. That the government, the king, has the right to say that that property used to be Reuven, that tree used to be Reuven's, it's not Reuven's anymore. And listen to the mushal that he gives. Uche'inyan hefker Beis Din Hefker. He says it's similar to the notion of Hefker Beis Din Hefker, which he's going to go on to explain. Just as in the realm of Hefker, that was the moshul, just as in Hefker Beis Din Hefker, when Beis Din is mafker your property, so now it's in limbo, somebody else comes and takes it, it belongs to them. So too, in Dina Machus Adina, the government is mafkir your property, and it's in limbo, and somebody else comes and takes it. He says, but let's say the government declares Reuven's tree is a hefker, and now they're sitting in the field, but no one took it yet, so that nothing happened yet. It's hefker, but it doesn't belong to anybody else yet. The government does not have the authority to say Reuven's trees are Shimon's. There's no such mechanism in halacha. The Dina Machus Adina cannot change property from Reuven to Shimon. Why? Because in hefker beis din hefker. The same way says Rabbeinu Yonah. Everybody knows. Almost everybody knows. Everybody knows says Rabbeinu Yonah. Hefker beis din hefker can't do that. So hefker beis din hefker and Dina Machus Adina are pretty much working in the same ways. And just as Hefker Beis Din Hefker cannot move property from Reuven to Shimon, it can declare Reuven's property Hefker and enable Shimon to go ahead and be Zoich on it, but it can't do that jump from one to another. Neither can Dina de Machus Adina. That's the Chiddush of Rabbeinu Yonah. So before we go back to whether Hefker Beis Din Hefker can or cannot to do that, I just want to focus on a minute on the comparison. Rabbeinu Yonah just had the blackboard here. He just drew an equal sign on the board. He just compared the halachic mechanism of how Hefker Beis Din Hefker works, and how the halachic mechanism of Dina Machus Adina works. Honestly, what is this connection living or dead between the two? Doesn't Hefker Beis Din Hefker mean three Rabbonim, Choshev Tamid Chachomim, Smuchin, Beis Din Agadol, rabbis from Nokol Tarakula? Isn't that the model of Hefker Beis Din Hefker? What in the world does that have to do with, let's see if I get all my kings in right, with King George III, King Henry VIII, and now King Charles III, right? I think he's the third, okay? Sure, he's already officially the third, okay. So you have three kings, and then, you don't need three, one king. King Charles III gets up and makes that takana, that Dina Machus Adina. What does that have to do with Hefker Beis Din Hefker? Hefker Beis Din Hefker has to do with great Tamid HaChachamim, right? Don't you have to be a Beis Din? So what's the answer? No, we're wrong. It says to the Dvar Avram, If the din of Hefke Beis and Hefke would have been Neveya, would have emanated from the Tamil Chacham Shabbat, the Chachmas HaTorah Shabbat, so the comparison to the Goyishiki was the Goyishiki you have to do with the Beis din of Hefke Beis and Hefke. The answer is, Hefke Beis and Hefke is nothing to do with Torah. I'll tell you a secret, it's nothing to do with Jewish either. It's nothing to do with Judaism. Hefke Beis and Hefke is simply the Torah built in the following mechanism. Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Chvod of Yatzvah, he built the world, he understood that Ish Yisrael Chaim below, you have to have a system. If you don't have some kind of a malchus, some kind of a government, some kind of a judicial system, it's going to be a total, no part of that, total hefkevelt. So therefore, the halacha understood that, the halacha recognized it, and the halacha says, and therefore, wherever you live, and whatever body is deciding to serve that role in the community, they are given that koach ha-Torah called hefke bezin hefker. It's nothing to do with Judaism, nothing to do with Beis Din in terms of Rabbanim. That chiluk of Rabbi Yonah that Avram elaborates about is right out of Agamar. That's exactly what Tosafot said. Exactly what Rabbi Tam said. That's why you want to know why the Bnei Bavel are better than the Bnei Tishrael. Not because of Greater Menachemim, because they're tougher, because they're stronger, because they have more political clout. They don't have to have religious clout; they have political clout. So what's appearing in Agamar with the Tosafot? What's appearing in Rabbi Yonah? So that Avram put all the pieces of this puzzle together. So the emes is that this Rabbi Yonah is a tremendous chiddush, really, really a tremendous chiddush. Because probably all the Rishonim who actually went searching high and low for other sources for how the world Chazal figured out the Melchus Adina, nobody else came up with this model of Rabbi Yonah. Nobody that I know of says explicitly like this Rabbi Yonah in Bava Basra. What were the more quote unquote conventional ways of understanding the Melchus Adina? So most of the other Rishonim said the Melchus Adina is based on a different parasha. It's based on some other mechanism in Halacha. What is that other mechanism? So there are several, two popular other mechanisms that are presented. One is the Reshbam, and one is the Ran. The Reshbam in Bava Basra says, I'll tell you exactly why Din Melchus Adina works. Where did it come from, Din Melchus Adina? Says Reshbam, very simple. Said, if you and I decide, we enter into an agreement together. We say, we're going to go do the following deal together. I obligate myself to do this, and you obligate yourself to do this. And we all, I'm trusting you, and you're trusting me, and we all agree to each other. So that's binding. Now, whether you need a formal kinyan, whether it's nikkun bi'amira, that's already details. But the basic fundamental yisod that the Torah gives the right to bnei adam to make certain hiskeim together, to make certain agreements together, that's a given. To such an extent that we paskin lahalacha that b'tanai shemamam and kayim, that let's say two people make an agreement between themselves, even against the Dini HaTorah of Dini Mamunus. They both agree to say, you know what, we're going to have a deal and oh no, I won't apply. We're going to have a deal and Shvita Sub doesn't work. We're going to make changes in the system. So we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that Masa Mashkas B'Torah B'Tanai Shem Mamunus don't kayim. So there is a certain degree of understanding within the world of Chesha Mishpat. There are certain objective rules and then the two parties, if everybody's agree, everyone is happy, you can do whatever you want. So says the Rashbam, you wonder what Din Melchus Adin is? It's exactly what it is. Everybody who's living in this particular place has agreed, they've signed off, not literally but figuratively, that they're going to follow what the king's laws are, what the government laws are. Who decided this? Who agreed? Says Rashi, it's very simple. If you don't agree, you know what? Don't live here. Go move elsewhere. There's a muvan me'elav, there's a hesked b'nei adam. When you live in a community, you are going to follow what the rules of that community are. Whatever that means, whether you whether it's a king, whether it's a dictatorship, whether it's a democracy, whatever it is, whether it's a town that has a base, whatever it is. The Din Melchus Adina is not a brand new halacha, says the Rashbam. The Melchus Adina is just a simple heskim, ben b'nei adam. That's the Rashbam's approach. So the Rashbam did not go down the Rabbin Yod. He did not link this to Hefke Beis and Hefker. Probably the reason is that the Rashbam would say, what in the world does King Charles III have to do with Ezra and Yeshua? It's a Jewish thing. It's a Torah thing. It's a halachic thing. It's have to do with the three with the Goyish king. The Ran in Maseches Nedarim has a whole other twist in terms of Din Melchus Adina. The Ran says it's pure Din Mominus. Pure Din Mominus as follows. Let's say it's a marshal. Okay. Let's say I own property. Right. It's my house. I bought it. I paid for it. It's my house. You walk into my house. And you want to start doing things your own way. You want your own. I say, excuse me, either follow by rules or I throw you out. I can do that. The guy said, no, I'm not leaving. In theory, call the cops. Trespassing, it's my property. It's like, you're going to take my car and drive my car away. We call that a gazela. So if it's my property and I tell you, I don't want you in my house. I only want you in my house. If you follow my rules, you want to make your own rules. Go move somewhere else. So that's move on to Yalof. So comes the Ran and says, who owns the land? Dinim a pure dinim amnes. Who owns the land? So the Gemara says, Gittin says, there's a parashat kibush mochama. That one country goes to war against another country, so who gets the land? So I'm not sure the UN would agree to this, but who gets the land? If you win the war, so it's your land. Otherwise, ilud of a soif. So we're going to go. Only when they talk about Eretz Yisrael do they have this idea that whatever happened in the last 50 years, we have to go back 50, we have to go back 80 years ago. All other countries, the history from the day of my separation, so how did France become France? Because they put back in the 1100s, they fought against England, they took this land, they could lack land. That's the way the world works. For better or for worse, that's the way the world works, called Kibush Muhammad. So the halacha recognizes that. There's a concept called Kibush Muhammad. So it comes around and says, the king conquered the land, so he makes a rule, you have to pay taxes. So you want to live in his house without following his rules? You're a god, get lost. He said, you want to live in his land and you want to say, no, I'm not going to give him the trees. What are you not going to give him the trees? It's his trees. It all belongs to him anyway. It's the, whoever is the melech. So who's the melech? So again, the Gemara was talking about Dina de Machusadina. So how does this play out in terms of a democracy? So stomach means as follows. And to go back in American history. So the Revolutionary Army fought against King George, right? Okay? So they fought against King George. And they won. So the American people, we the people, so they conquered the land. So the land belonged to the people. So they decided they don't want to put up a king. They want to keep it for the people. They want to be a democracy. Good. So they hand it over and they could decide whatever they want. So they decide we're going to make a government and we're going to have so the Congress is going to make laws and we're going to have executive, whatever rules they want. They're the bailiff. You don't like it? You want to have a different system? Go conquer your own country and make a new system. The mind said, that's where you live. It's not exactly like the Rashbam. The Rashbam said that also, if you don't like it, move. It's a different twist. The Rashbam said, if you don't like it, move, because you agreed to it. So once you signed, by moving into the country, you became a citizen of the United States of America. You're going to keep the laws. According to the Ran, it's pure dinim amnes. It's mamish, it's simple, the simple equation of kibush mochama. So this Ran became very, very popular, and some people had a lot of, and we'll leave out all the politics of how this Ran has become a very flesh rod for a lot of excitement. We're going to leave out the political side. We'll just quote Mom from the Haley Ran says. The Ran says, based on this idea, that the whole Yisod of Dinah Mechusadina is based on Kibush Muhammad, what if you have a particular geographic location that is not subject to the rules of Kibush Muhammad? Let's agree to there's a place in the globe that Kibush Muhammad doesn't apply to. I know. Antarctica. No one's allowed to conquer Antarctica. Let's agree to there would be a place where the rules of Kibush Muhammad don't apply to. So then it's not Hefker. There's no Dinah Mechusadina. There's no God. The government only has a shlita from the Korach and the Kinyan Dinah moments that it has. So says the Ran, there is such a place. You don't have to go to Antarctica. It's called Eretz Yisrael. He said, a government comes, the Roman government comes, then conquer Eretz Yisrael. They're getting off them. It's not theirs. But Medivar Mund is a parish of Kibush Muhammad. Those are lands where Kosh Baruch Hu didn't give directly to any given person. Kosh Baruch Hu said, everyone just, you decide on your own. So you go here, you go here, you go here. You guys can figure out who's going to get what. You want to fight and figure out what to do. So Kosh Baruch Hu said, this is mine. I'm giving it to Amavinu. I'm giving it to his descendants. The Romans and the Greeks and the Persians and the Arabs and the British, whoever comes to take it, you're going to have them. He said, you don't have the parish. There's no Kibush Muhammad in Eretz Israel. Therefore, the Ran says there's no din of Mechusadin in Eretz Israel. So the Ran, again, the Ran was writing in the 1100s, 1200s, 1300s. So the Ran says, I'm living now in Spain, and I want to know there's a government in Eretz Israel. Who's running Eretz Israel now? So the Muslims are running this part, the Crusaders are trying to run. Says, they're all guys want him. They're all going to love him. You don't have to keep any of the laws in Eretz Yisrael because there's no Kibush Muhammad in Eretz Yisrael. There's no Kibush Muhammad in Mele. There's no Dinah Mechusadina. That's what the Ran says. So again, I'll leave out the details of how this Ran has been quoted or misquoted or unquoted for in the more modern world. But again, the Hayotim Advarim for us is that from the fact that all the Rishonim are searching high and low for some other models of Dinah Mechusadina, nobody's going down this Rabbeinu Yonah. I'll tell you why. Because the Rinyon is a Bichidish. I mean, we like it because it fits into the Taisus and Asugyan and the Vavron. We like that whole picture, but we have to be intellectually honest that other Rishonim probably didn't see Dinah Mechusadina in Hefker Beis and Hefker in the same light, because they thought Hefker Beis and Hefker was much more Bezin, much more rabbis, much more Tercham oriented than the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Dvarim. So I hope on it, we have at least the starting point in our sugya, not the finishing point, but the starting point in our sugya. The starting point is, if you make a mistake, Paskin Shaila, you better pay. You're not a Mamazik, Gami, whatever it is. So there's a special halacha that gives you a Ptor. Rashi said the Ptor is based on Hefker, based on Hefker. The Gemara has the hierarchy between Bnei Babel versus Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos made the observation, how come in this of a Hefker it's one way, and Dina Mamazik it's the other way? And Tosfos says, yep, that's not the way it is. So the Avram rammed that Tosfos and says, you see from here that Hefker, based on Hefker is a function of the Srara, of the political, the cloud, the secular rulership, rather than the halachic expertise. And that seems to be expressed by the Rabbeinu Yonah as well. But Lamaisa, the other Mishnah who didn't go down Rabbeinu Yonah's route, probably didn't buy into that. Next time we'll try to continue.
Question.
Yeah.
So Rabbeinu Yonah,
he
didn't go down